Good. Parakei Mishnah. New Mishnah. So this Mishnah is going to be a little bit different than the Mishnahs we've covered before, because as you're going to see over here, the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos has many Mishnayos that begin without attribution. Instead of most of Pirkei Avos, which are statements by various rabbinic personalities, and as we've seen through our journeys through Pirkei Avos, ultimately, again, those statements are very often reflective of some of the realities of those rabbinic personalities. In Parak Hey, we have a couple of Mishnayos that are much more what we'll call just historical fact. So there's a number of Mishnayos that start this way in the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos. You know that 10 things occurred here, 5 things occurred here. So we're going to focus on one of those Mishnayos. This is chapter 5, Mishnah 5. Parak Hey, Mishnah Hey. And this Mishnah you're going to see is incredibly important for a variety of reasons. Asara nisim na'afsu la'avosina b'beis hamikdash. There were 10 miracles that occurred for our ancestors in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah is going to go through all of them. And again, let's go through them. Number one, lohipile isha mereach basar hakodesh. A woman never miscarried from literally smelling sacrificial meat. Now again, we'll get into greater depth what all of this means. V'lo hisriach basar hakodesh me'olam. Sacrificial meat, never spoiled. V'lo nira zvuv bebeis hamidbachim. And there was never a fly that was seen in the chamber where the meat was slaughtered. V'lo era keri l'koin b'yamikipurim. The Kohen, this Kohen, the Kohen Gadol, never experienced an emission over the course of Yom Kippur that would render him tamei and unfit to do the avodah. The rains never extinguished the fire on the outside. Remember again, Beis Hamikdash. There are how many altars? How many mizbechos? 2. Where were they? One was right in the chaser. Right outside, remember, not in the Azar, not in the courtyard, but in what we call the Chatzar HaLeviim or Chatzar HaMikdash, up the steps, down the steps on the other side. That Mizbeach was called Mizbeach HaNechoshes, right? We learn about it this week's parasha. Mizbeach HaNechoshes, copper altar. What was done on that particular Mizbeach? Karbanos, animal sacrifices. Second Mizbeach was where? Inside of the actual Beis HaMikdash, it was called Mizbeach HaKitoris or Mizbeach HaZov, which was exclusively used for the burning of incense. This particular miracle is speaking about the outer Mizbeach, the Mizbeach HaChitzon, the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, the Mizbeach for animal sacrifice. As we're going to see again, there was a halacha that said that you had to have an Ish Tamid, Tukat Ala Mizbeach, there had to be an ever-burning fire on that particular Mizbeach, and despite the fact that that Mizbeach was outside, nevertheless, the rains never extinguished that fire. So literally translated, the winds never disrupted the pillar of smoke. So again, we'll discuss to where and to what this applies to. V'lo nimtza psul ba'omer, ubishtei halechem, ubelechem aponim. How would you translate that phrase? V'lo nimtza psul? Sorry? Never a blemish. There was never anything disqualifying about the Omer. Omer is? We learned this from Yochanan ben Zakkai. Brought when? Second day of Pesach. From what crop? Barley. Good. That's the Omer. Shtei Halechem was brought when? Shavuos. Excellent. Was comprised of? Take a wild guess. Shtei Halechem. 2 loaves. Excellent. Made of? Grain. Remember again, wheat. Remember again, the Omer is barley, Shtei Halechem is wheat, Ubelechem Aponim. And of course, Lechem Aponim refers to the loaves placed on the Shulchan, the 12 loaves. So the Mishnah seems to be telling me that there was never any kind of disqualifying factor that occurred within the Omer, Shtei Halechem, Lechem Aponim. Now, next. Omdin Tzufufim, Meshtachavim Rivachim. So this is another interesting one. Right now we'll just translate again and we'll go through them in greater depth. Omdin tzufufim mishtachavim rivachim means when the people stood together. Tzufufim means what? They were squished, right? The technical term. Right? They were crowded, right? Very crowded. Umishtachavim revachim. But when they bow down, plenty of space. Again, where that was, who that was referring to, we'll discuss in the Gemara, well, we'll discuss in the commentaries as well. V'lo hizik nachash v'akrav b'Yerushalayim me'olam. Another very interesting miracle. No one apparently was ever harmed by a snake or a scorpion in Yerushalayim. V'lo amar adam l'chavero, tsar li hamakom sha'alin b'Yerushalayim. And no one ever said to his friend, there is not enough space for me to dwell in Yerushalayim. Okay, so before let's take a step back. What's your obvious question on this Mishnah? I'm sorry? What is this coming to teach us? Remember again, it's beautiful to see miracles. It's fantastic. We are a people of miracles. There's no question. We have historical miracles, contemporary miracles. We look forward to future miracles. These are very interesting miracles that occurred on the Beis HaMikdash. But remember again, what is Pirkei Avos? We've learned enough already to know. What is Pirkei Avos? Lessons. Lessons for what? For us. For contemporary life. Everything we've seen in Pirkei Avos is there to allow us to lead more meaningful and enhanced existence. So as such, you have a very basic question. Don't get me wrong. I'm always interested to learn about the miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. It's always quite fascinating and riveting. But the question is, what does this come to teach me? So let's take a look. Pat number two, the Medrash Shmuel. The Medrash Shmuel is a perush on Pirkei Avos, written by a commentator by the name of Rav Shmuel Uzida. Rav Shmuel Uzida lives in the 1400s in Spain, prior to the Inquisition, and he writes a very, we'll call it esoteric, Kabbalistic, but also highly intellectual perush on Pirkei Avos. So the Medrash Shmuel writes as follows: Yesh lahavin inyan elu yud nisim shenasu la'avosenu. We have to understand these 10 miracles that occurred for our forefathers. Kilachora, rubam hem tzorech gavoa. Now, Menschel writes something very interesting. If I were to ask you, what's the common denominator amongst most of the miracles mentioned here? Not all, but most. Correct. They were necessary, not really for us. They are more necessary so as to enable the avoda. Meaning, let's look at it very quickly. Right, for example, sacrificial meat never spoiled. There was never a fly in the chamber slaughter. Right, the Kohen Gadol never became tameh and precluded from doing the avoda. The rain never extinguished the fire. All these different things. There was never psul in the omer, shteha lechem, lechem aponim. These were all, again, incredible miracles, but miracles which were necessary in order to allow the avoda to occur. Right? All of these miracles were really not done for us, but they were done for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chein inyon kiboy hagishamim es isha atse me'aracha. V'im kein hachi havali lemisni. Asara nisim naasu bebeis hamikdash, v'lama yichid osam la'avosenu. So what's the question of the Medrash Shmuel? What's the question? Bless you. What's the question?
It seems like it's
Rasha. Oh, so has a very simple syntax question. The Mishnah reads, Asara nisim naasu la'avosenu bebeis hamikdash. So again, if you're a purist and you're reading that phrase, you assume that what is going to follow? What is going to follow? 10 miracles occurred for our forefathers. So what is Mishnah going to teach me? What is Mishnah going to teach me? 10 miracles that what? That happened? Benefited. Right? That's again just how we would read it. If you're going to tell me 10 miracles occurred for our forefathers, I would assume the miracles that occurred somehow benefited our forefathers. What the Medrash Shmuel is highlighting over here is these miracles are great, they're very interesting, and there's no question on some level they benefited our forefathers in that they enabled us to continue to engage in temple service, but we were not really, it's not what we call the benefit. I mean, give me an example of a miracle that benefited our forefathers. Kriyas Yamsuf, good. The Mun, right? These are miracles that occurred that directly benefited our forefathers. We were able to escape the Egyptians. We were able to survive in the desert. These miracles, let me ask you, and if a psul would have happened in the Omer, Shteh Alechem Alechem upon him, what would have happened to our forefathers? They would have gone on, right? And if the Kohen Gadol would have become Tame on Yom Kippur, what would have happened? This is what happens when I'm gone for a week. Everyone, mamish, like, slips into a sleep. And if the Kohen Gadol, good morning, everyone. If the Kohen Gadol would have gone ahead and become Tame, what would have happened? Right, remember again, there was always a backup Kohen Gadol. There was always a Skan Kohen Gadol. There was always a backup, because again, the Kohen Gadol might die. The Kohen Gadol, who knows what could happen. There's always a backup plan. So ask the Medrash Shmuel, don't tell me Asar Nisim La'asu La'avoseinu. This wasn't done for our forefathers. You could say there were 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. So why does the Mishnah say 10 miracles occurred for our forefathers? Look at the second paragraph at number 2. Amnam Efshar Ki ikir hanisim ha'ela hayu kidei sheyiru avosenu v'yikhu musar ki mikol neis v'neis yishma chacham v'yosef lekach kidei liyira es Hashem elokav akin yichet osam la'avosenu. What does the Medrash Shmuel answer? Oh, that these miracles that occurred, there is the miracle, and then there is the message. There is the miracle and the message. And by the way, we're going to see a little bit later on, as we go through this Mishnah, the truth is every single miracle really has these two components. There is the miracle, there is the miraculous act, and there is the message. There's always this duality, right? There's always this dialectic with the miraculous activity. There's the miraculous act, and there is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to convey. So says the Medrash Shmuel something amazing. Asara nisim nasu la'avoseinu in Beis HaMikdash means there are 10 miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash. And although you'll look at these miracles and you'll say, okay, very nice, very interesting, 10 miracles occurred in the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishnah is telling us la'avoseinu. They were done for our forefathers. There is a message. There is something deeper that is being conveyed to us over here. And now, why is this important for us? Why is this la'avoseinu important for us? Without the la'avoseinu, I read this Mishnah, and what do I see? Right? Interesting fact. I see a history lesson. History lesson. Fantastic. I love learning about the Beis HaMikdash. I see a history lesson. La'avoseinu comes along and tells you that what? This is not a history lesson. This is a contemporary life lesson. That embedded in each of these miracles is some deeper life lesson which could fundamentally enhance and amplify the way we live, even in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. Yes?
Something slightly bothering me, because, I don't know, to me it seems like this question assumes that the Huda is not for our benefit.
That?
The Huda is not directly for our benefit.
It's for our benefit. What does that have to do with us now?
Oh.
Meaning, right, we're trying to figure out, remember, all of the beauty of Pirkei Avos. You're saying good. There's no question when the Beis HaMikdash stood, you could have said that the impact of the miracles is that the Avoda got done, and we all benefit from the Avoda. 1,000% correct. But remember, again, part of like the mantra of Pirkei Avos are ongoing contemporary lessons. So if this Mishnah would have just appeared somewhere else, I would have been totally fine with your explanation. But now that it's here in Pirkei Avos, that tells me again there's a contemporary moral ethical lesson as well. What is it? And by the way, this is incredibly important, because you know we're coming now to the parshios of Truma, Tetzave, Vayakel, Pakudei, and then Chumash Vayikra. So remember again, these parshios all about Big Day Kahuna, all about the fabrication of the Mishkan, the utensils, Vayikra, all pretty much all about sacrificial law. And very often when we look at these parshios, we often ask ourselves a basic question, which is, what does that have to do with me? Right? And Torah spends a lot of time focusing on details that, to be honest, appear at first glance to be somewhat irrelevant. What the Medrash Shmuel is teaching us is something dramatically amazing. In every sacrificial detail, there is an eternal message. The reason, I'll amplify this question even more. What's your more fundamental question when you look at the parashas of Truma and Tetzaveh? And Vayakal Pekudei, they're repeats, right? Well, what's the fundamental question? Parashat Truma is all about the fabrication of the Mishkan. What's your obvious question? We don't have a Mishkan, and we will never have a Mishkan. Right? Meaning, again, had the Torah spent a lot of time on the details of the Beis HaMikdash, so I would have said, okay, even though we don't yet have a Beis HaMikdash, we're going to Meretz Hashem, have another Beis HaMikdash. There will never again be a Mishkan. It's not going to happen. There'll be a third Beis HaMikdash, Meher Rabbi Yameinu, but there will never be another Mishkan. And yet the Torah spends so much time to the very last Amah, telling us about the dimensions of the Mishkan, what everything is made of, how to fabricate everything. The utensils I understand, because the Aron is the Aron, the Shulchan is the Shulchan, the Mizbeach is the Mizbeach. But I know the walls, I know the sockets, I know this, I know that. It all points in one direction. That obviously, embedded in these details are not just architectural drawings and blueprints, but embedded in these details are the very lessons for effective living. The Medrash Shmuel is just carrying on that theme. These 10 miracles which occurred in the Beis HaMikdash were not just relevant in that they enabled the Avoda to occur. Were not just relevant in that they allowed the Beis HaMikdash to function. But there's a message for us as well. And a message today, even in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. So let's analyze this. Number 3. So we're going to do a couple of pieces from the Medrash Shmuel, and the Meretz Hashem, we'll jump around a little bit. So take a look. So we're going to go through this miracle by miracle. So remember again, what was miracle number one? Miracle number one. No woman miscarried as a result of smelling sacrificial meat. So the first obvious question is, right, what does that mean? Right? What does it even? Why would she miscarry as a result of smelling sacrificial meat? So take a look at number 3. So this is pretty amazing. So he says. So first of all, just to give you a little bit of context with this, right? The miscarrying as a result of sacrificial meat on a pashut level means like this: a woman is walking into Yerushalayim. Masim. Now the truth is, when the Beis HaMikdash stood, right? What did you smell when you walked into Yerushalayim? Barbecue, right? You smelled meat, right? Because there was karbanos and there was a mizbeach. And not only that, remember again, in Yerushalayim itself, remember, without getting too technical over here, there are pretty much two different classes, or pretty much two different categories of karbanos. There's what's called kodshei kadoshim, kodshim kalim. Kodshei kadoshim could only be eaten within the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, or within the Azara. Kodshim kalim can be eaten even in Yerushalayim, which means that one would have to assume that on any given day, there's karbanos being offered in the Beis HaMikdash, there's people preparing their karbanos, ultimately in Yerushalayim, on the Har HaBayis. So a pregnant woman walks into Yerushalayim, she smells the delicious meat, what does she want? Bepasha, she wants to have some of the meat. What's the problem? She can't. Why? Because a lot of times sacrificial meat is off limits to anyone but Kohanim. So sometimes, again, a pregnant woman can have a craving for something that she cannot have. Now understand, in general, the halacha takes the cravings of a pregnant woman very seriously. Right? Why does the halacha take the cravings of a pregnant woman very seriously? There's a concern, right? Remember again, a woman who is pregnant is considered to be a chola shigesh ba sakana. She's considered to be someone who is quote-unquote ill and in a dangerous state of illness. So therefore, again, if the pregnant woman says that she needs something, halacha says, give it to her. I'll give you an example of this. Pregnant woman says she needs to eat on Yom Kippur. What's the halacha? So, not so fast, right? The halacha says like this. The halacha says that first we go ahead, and the gemara, actually the lashon of the gemara is you dip a toothpick in some gravy. You allow her first to see if that will satisfy her urge. But fast forward a little bit, if she still says, I need. So then the halacha is, under certain circumstances, you give her to eat. Why am I sharing this with you? Because the halacha understands, not just that a pregnant woman has these strange kind of cravings, but the halacha understands that if a pregnant woman feels for her body that she needs something, the halacha says we give it to her. That being said, there are certain things that just won't work. If a pregnant woman says, I need to have of that carbon, we can't give her of that carbon if it's something that she is not allowed to have. So at the most basic level, what the miracle seems to be is that a pregnant woman never miscarried because of a desire or an urge to eat of sacrificial meat and not being granted that ability. Even though, again, Talocha seems to say that Chas v'Shalom, a woman could miscarry as a result of not getting what she feels her body needs, no woman ever miscarried because she wanted sacrificial meat and wasn't able to eat it. Okay? So what's the message? Take a look at number 3, right? It's the Medrash Shmuel. V'amar, lo epil le'isha mirech basar ha-kodesh, hishmi'anu, shelo ratzach shem yisbarach la'asos ha-neis, ba'ofen acher, v'hu shelo yetze ha-reach l'chutz, v'cheivan shelo tariach, lo tapil. So remember again, it says in Medrash Shmuel, well, God, if you're making miracles, there's a simpler miracle. What's a simpler miracle? Don't let the smell, I don't know what the right word is, dissipate. In other words, why don't you make a miracle that the carbonos did not go ahead and give off some type of aroma? Right? Make it be a miracle that ultimately, again, you couldn't smell the carbonos. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't want to do that. Why? Ki medaber, he says something amazing. Lefi she'ikar ha'neis, haye kedei she'avinu avosenu. Listen to this. Ki midavar shel kedusha, Ein ra nimshach mimenu. What does that mean? Kimi davar shel kedusha, ein ra. We shall underline that line. Kimi davar shel kedusha, ein ra nimshach mimenu. What does that mean? Nothing bad will happen from a davar shebikdusha. In other words, what does that mean? Nothing bad will happen from davar shebikdusha. What does that mean? So that when you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing bad will ever come from that. Nothing tragic will ever come from that. Where there is sacred avodah, there cannot be a negative byproduct. Ki midaver shel kedusha, ein ra nimshach mimen. Ubazeh yuvana adam, la'avodas Hashem, mebli pacha ve'ima. So says the Medrash. So one second before we go on with this. So okay. So says the Medrash Shmuel. So what's the takeaway message? What's the takeaway miracle from here? I'm offering up a carbon. The carbon emits a very pleasing aroma, not just in a spiritual sense, but in a physical sense as well. It smells delicious. What's the concern? A pregnant woman is going to smell it, develop a craving for it. She's going to want to have it. What's the problem? What's the problem? She can't. Does that not pose a mortal danger to her and to her unborn child? Miracle number one, it didn't. No pregnant woman ever suffered a serious craving as a result of the smell of sacrificial meat. The lesson being, says the Medrash Shmuel, Kimi davar shel kedusha ein ra nimshach mimenu. So tell me again, ultimately, what's the takeaway message from that? Don't be afraid to do what has to be done to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes in life, says the Medrash Shmuel, excellent, so let's read this inside. Ubazeh yuvana adam, la'avod es Hashem. From this we learn that a person has to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mibli pachad ve'ema sheyuzak. Sometimes we are concerned that as a result of our avodas Hashem, we will be compromised. We will be put at a disadvantage, or we will be harmed. V'shum davar. Kishluchei mitzvah. So what does that mean? Give me an example of where we think sometimes that as a result of our avodas Hashem, we'll be compromised or put at a disadvantage.
People who couldn't work on Shabbos.
Oh, excellent. So right, again, remember, people who couldn't work on Shabbos, although I'll tell you something amazing. You know, that's such an incredible such an incredible example, but you know, just understand the times that you are growing up in, is that that is no longer the challenge. Right? Shmiras Shabbos is no longer the challenge. You could be a frum Jew in the workplace and do whatever you want, but understand, you are young women going into the workplace. And sometimes you may think that you have to take shortcuts, or you may think that in order to advance yourselves or your careers, that you have to do, sometimes there are shortcuts on tznius, sometimes there are shortcuts on interpersonal conduct. The Medrash Shmuel is saying is, don't take shortcuts. Don't take shortcuts. If you go ahead and you know that you're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you maintain fidelity and allegiance to your values, nothing bad will ever come from it. And to take this a step further, in the workplace, if it turns out that you don't get the job because of your tznius or because of anything else, then you know what? It wasn't the job for you to begin with. If you have to compromise your ideas or your ideals, then it's not the right setting. Says the Medrash Shmuel, because when you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and you live up to the expectations of the Ribono Shel Olam, nothing bad will ever occur as a result of that. He goes on, he says, Ki shluchei mitzvah ina nizakin, va'adam don kavachomer me'atzmo, uma im ha'reach shel basar HaKodesh, derech alav milsi lo nimshach hezek mimeno, kavachomer le'mitzvos gufei, Kishluchei mitzvah eina nizakin. If the scent, says the Medrash Shmuel, which doesn't even have any kind of tangibility to it, could not harm, all the more so mitzvos themselves, which do have a physicality from it, no harm will come from it. So this, I think, is an incredible, incredible idea. Because what it's saying is that in life, sometimes, and we all have situations like this, where I want to do the right thing, but I'm nervous that if I do the right thing, I'm going to be compromised. The Medrash Shmuel says, in life, if you do the right thing, you will never be compromised. If you follow the Ratzon Hashem, you will not be compromised. Now, I want to give a caveat to this. The caveat to this is, there are times where if you follow the Ratzon Hashem, certain doors will be closed in your face, and certain opportunities will not materialize. But if by following the Ratzon Hashem, those doors are closed and the opportunities don't materialize, then those were never the right doors, and those were never the right opportunities to begin with. If you follow the Ratzon Hashem, if you do what you understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of you to do, Shluchei mitzvah eino nizakin. You will never be compromised. You will never be put at a disadvantage. You will never be hurt. That's lesson number one. And it's incredible, by the way, because the truth is, I'm always blown away by this Medrash Shmuel, because when you look at that first miracle, you say to yourself, there's no way this has anything to do with me. I'm very impressed that a pregnant woman never miscarried. And I could say even more, there's nothing that this has to do with me. That a pregnant woman never miscarried from the scent of the sacrificial meat, I'm incredibly impressed, but there's nothing for me to learn. To which, ultimately, again, the Medrash Shmuel says, no, the karbonos represent Ratzon Hashem. The karbonos represent Avodas Hashem. That's what a karbon is. A karbon represents service of God. So what is it saying? The karbon never caused any harm to anyone else. The message being, Avodas Hashem will not result in harm to the individual. Now, by the way, I want to take it a step further. Because in this case, so the karban, the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, see, the Medrash Shmuel is saying is that the message is that when I go ahead and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what? What's the message?
No harm will come.
No harm will come to who? Yeah. To me. But the truth is, there's another message in this, which is no harm will come to anyone. This is an incredible message in Avodas Hashem. You see, sometimes the mistake we make in Avodas Hashem is that I feel that if I'm doing quote-unquote what's right, the collateral damage upon other people doesn't matter. And that's not true. In Avodas Hashem, you have to be ever aware and ever cognizant of the impact of your Avodah on other people. I can't build up my own spirituality on the shoulders or on the back of someone else. If my avodas Hashem negatively impacts or compromises you, then there's something different I have to do about my avodas Hashem. Having us with the Medrash Shmuel is building on also. There's a duality in this message. The carbon represents avodas Hashem. The Medrash Shmuel is saying, you see from here that when you live a life that is in consonance and in conformance with the Ratzon Hashem, no harm will come to you. And again, I want to give the caveat because sometimes you understand this too simplistically. It does not mean that if you live a life of Avodas Hashem, that everything is going to be easy. It doesn't mean that if you live a life of Avodas Hashem, everything is going to fall into place just as you want it. And it doesn't mean that if you live a life of Avodas Hashem, ultimately everything is going to go according to plan. There is no guarantee for any of those things. What it does mean is that if you live a life of Avodas Hashem, you will see that at the end of the day, everything will be okay. Maybe not the way you thought it would be, maybe not how you thought it would be, but at the end of the day, you will never be harmed. You will never suffer the setbacks of life as a result of living in consonance and in conformance with the Ratzon HaBore. But to take it a step further, true Avodas Hashem is not only something that does not harm me, but it also doesn't harm the other. In the building and accumulation of your Ruchnius, you have to be aware of the other. You have to be aware of the feelings of the other. You have to be aware of the persona of the other. And you always have to be aware of the impact of your personal actions on the other. That's miracle number one. Let's do one more for today. Take a look at number four. What was miracle number two? Miracle number two. Right? Lo hisriach basar kodesh me'olam. Sacrificial meat never spoiled. Okay, what's the pshat with this one? So take a look, one more Medrash Shmuel. He writes over here, Anes HaBeis, who? V'lo esfiach basra kodesh me'olam. So what's this miracle? So the sacrificial meat never spoiled. Hodiya bazeh, get ready for this. Kibiyat ha'adam, actually, before we go on. So now let's see the beauty of the Medrash Shmuel, by the way, and we're going to see, we're not going to do all of his interpretations, we'll do a number of them, but you're going to begin to see a theme. So the Medrash Shmuel's model, sacrificial meat, right, karbanos refers to what? Service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if I were to ask you, what's the message in the miracle that the sacrificial meat never spoiled? What's the message? So first, our relationship with Hashem can never spoil. What does that mean? So first, it could be beautiful. It could be the idea that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always possible. There's no such thing as spoilage in the relationship with God, no matter what we do or don't do. Excellent. What else could it mean? Any other ideas? Take a look at number four. He says, Me'olam odia bazeh kibiyat ha'adam ligrom Shelo yasriach velo yavish v'rima lo si yabo achar moso ukema said Rabbi Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon shemotzi b'chol shas dikali ditarbo velo hivish v'kar latzmo. Skip a little bit. Falzil meis amikdash shechol yom v'yom. I'm going to come back to this in just a moment. The last line of the right-hand paragraph. Our ancestors in the Beis HaMikdash every single day. They saw this miracle with their own eyes. Ki baser hakodesh lo hisriach me'olam. So you think to yourself, of course the meat didn't spoil. You have refrigeration. Remember, there's no refrigeration. Eretz Yisrael gets very hot during the summer. Afil b'tekufas tamos, even during the summertime. V'afilu hakodshim shene'echolim l'shnei yomim v'layla echad. Remember again, there are also certain karbanos which you have the ability to consume for 2 days and one night. That's a long time for meat to be unrefrigerated, unpreserved. Especially during the summer. Can you imagine having a piece of meat out during the summer for 2 days? I guarantee you, if that piece of meat was out for the whole day, you wouldn't eat it. Let alone, again, 2 days and a night in between during the summertime. Umizehanes, ya'aseh kol echad kal v'chomer li'atzmo. Says the Medrash Shmuel, based on this miracle, every person has to make a kal v'chomer for themselves. Yomar, im basra behema shakadusha lo chala aleha, rak bederech mikre al yedei dibor echot, sha'amar zu ola vizu shlamim. So says Meshul, what's the kavachomer? An animal becomes sanctified, how? How? Through a declaration. Someone just says, this animal is an ola, this animal is a shlamim. There's nothing really inherently that's changed about the animal, just the owner's made a declaration. But yet that animal becomes kodesh. U'bishvil osa kidusha kala, lo nitan lishros sirchon bebasar. And as a result of that simple declaration, right, that a person says, Harezu Ola, Harezu, whatever, whatever carbon you're declaring it. As a result of that simple declaration, this meat now does not spoil. Anu. Shinishmosenu chotzo mitachas kanfei ashchino. We, who have souls which were hewn out from underneath God's throne of glory, alachas kama vakama. All the more so. Sha'af bisareinu yishkon lavetach. Tell me what the Major Shmuel is saying. What's the message of the miracle? What's the message of the miracle? What would you say? Spirituality is a preservative. Which means what? If the animal which does not possess true kiddusha, right? Really what does an animal possess? It's what we'll call conferred holiness. What does conferred holiness mean? You confer holiness, right? Conferred holiness means the animal in and of itself is not holy. I place holiness upon it. How? How? By declaring it. Harezu ula ola, harezu shlamim, whatever you call it. Chatos, it's conferred holiness. Yet, amazingly enough, with that conferred holiness, something incredible occurs, which is what? Which is what? It becomes kadosh, and therefore, it doesn't spoil. Says the Medrash Shmuel, if that's what happens with conferred holiness, do we have conferred holiness? No, we have what? Right? Intrinsic holiness, or innate holiness, or inherent holiness. Right? We possess inherent holiness, innate holiness. We are holy by virtue of the fact that we possess an neshama that is chilek eloka mima'al mamish, that is a piece of the ribono shel olam. So if the animal doesn't spoil and all it has is conferred holiness, then imagine what we can, now what does this mean we don't spoil? What this means is as follows. Each of us encounters challenges, trials and tribulations in life. And sometimes those difficulties and those challenges are enough to bring us to our knees, enough to go ahead and fundamentally derail us, and mamish, like prevent us from finding our path in life. People encounter challenges in life that are enough to quote-unquote spoil them, are enough to ruin them. But if ultimately, again, the conferred kedusha is enough to prevent the animal from spoiling. So if we infuse ourselves with kedusha, if we infuse ourselves with holiness, if we live lives of spirituality, our ruchnius acts as a preservative. Our ruchnius makes sure that there is no spoilage. Our ruchnius makes sure that there is no rotting. Spirituality is the greatest life preservative. And this is an incredible, you know, if you remember, again, we spoke about in one of the previous Mishnayos of spirituality and Torah being a life preserver. Right? Right? Remember, again, we saw the Rebbe from, remember, we had this in the Rebbe from Stefan Esht, that this world is like a sea of raging waters. And the Torah, spirituality, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the life preserver. The Medrash Shmuel is taking this even a step further. How do you, there are so many things that threaten to cause rot, that threaten spoilage, all the difficulties, adversity, and challenges of life. So how do you prevent life spoilage? I don't mean like spoiling someone in a way. How do you prevent spoilage? How do you prevent rot from setting in? And the answer is ruchnius. Where there is holiness, and where there is kedusha, that's the greatest life preservative. And if conferred holiness works to prevent the animal from rotting or spoiling, then imagine what a life of ruchnius can do for us as well. And this is an incredibly dramatic message, because we all know we have to become ruchni people. Right? That's our mandate. That's our mission. We want to become inspired people. We want to become spiritual people. We want to become ultimately Ovdei Hashem. But why? Somebody would ask you why. Why is this so important? So what's the answer? Why is this so important? I'm asking you. Why is it important? You spend your lives doing this. Why is it important? I'm sorry?
I don't want to go to Gehenna.
I'm sorry? You don't want to go to Gehenna. That's good as a start, but truth is, at a certain point in time, if all I'm doing by serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu is avoiding Onesh, it becomes very flat and uninteresting. Definitely, no one wants to go to Gehenna. That's true. But on a deeper level, with the Medrash, and this is incredibly important, because so often we do things and we don't think about why we do them. Why is it so important to pursue a life of ruchnius? So the Medrash Shmuel is saying, because there are things in this world that create spoilage, and there are things in this world that create rot, and there are things in this world that create negativity, and there are things in this world that could derail you, and there are circumstances that could ruin you. So how do you prevent the spoilage, the rot, the ruination? And the answer is Kiddusha. Kiddusha is the greatest life preservative. Kiddusha is the thing that keeps you spiritually fresh. Kiddusha is what allows you to remain on the derech you need to go on and not be derailed. And if it works by an animal and prevents the spoilage of the meat of a behemoth, then imagine the preserving qualities that Kiddusha and Ruchnius could have for us as well. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up in Meretz Hashem with the third miracle in Meretz Hashem on Wednesday.